Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Well, good morning, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing. I am Randy Fine, your show host. Today, we're going to have a special guest, Ashley Levy, and we're going to be talking about the lunar cycles and the way crystals are related, and this is just really fascinating. When you understand the effect that lunar energy has on the mind, body, and spirit, it's easy to see why we need a relationship with the moon. Living in sync with the rhythm of the lunar cycle is a powerful way to stay balanced and aligned with universal energy. Healing crystals, which are natural amplifiers of energy, can enhance this connection. Today's special guest, Ashley Levy's book, Cosmic Crystals, The Rituals and Meditations for Connecting with Lunar Energy, helps us to better understand the energy of the moon and how to work with its energy using crystal rituals. Ashley Levy is the founder and educational director of the Love and Light School of Crystal Therapy, and many other things. She's been a featured guest on NBC, and she's been interviewed on many places. So we're really lucky to have her. I'm going to welcome her, and we'll get started. Well, good morning, Ashley. Welcome.
Hi, Randy. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Oh, you're so welcome. So I have your book in my hand right now, and it is absolutely beautiful. This is not the run-of-the-mill book. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous book, something that people might even want to keep on their coffee table because it's so pretty.
Well, thank you for that. I think it is, too.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. I get a lot of books, so, you know, this one really stands out. You've always been in the kind of spiritual energy, you know, that's always been part of you. But something prompted you to get into this lunar, learn about the lunar cycles and crystals and everything like that. So can you tell us a little bit about your story and how this happened?
Yeah, so, you know, it's so strange to be talking about it because for a long time it felt like such a deeply personal thing. And I really started sharing more about this more openly at the time that the book was ready to be released. So after I wrote the book, I went back to sit down and write the introduction and really talk about the journey as to how this book was created and what I hoped that it would do for other women and how I hoped that it would inspire other people. And when I sat down to write that introduction, what kind of poured out was just a lot of openness about my own personal journey. So about 2 weeks before my 29th birthday, I actually had a full hysterectomy. And it was really unexpected. I had been quite ill for some time. And although I tried several other things to kind of address the issues that I was having, a hysterectomy was really kind of what I was left with in terms of a really effective option. So, of course, I tried to go kind of non-surgical first, but when that didn't work out, this just, you know, became something that I was really open to. And I'm so glad that I did that in my life, because it was absolutely necessary for my health. But what I didn't expect was that after I had that surgery, I felt this kind of deep sadness and this type of mourning that I hadn't anticipated. Even though I was pretty young, my husband and I had decided not to have children. That was okay. I wasn't super concerned about that. But what I didn't anticipate and didn't expect was that there was almost this feeling of like a loss of my womanness and my femininity because of the loss of my womb. And I think that in a lot of modern spiritual circles and in a lot of modern feminist circles, there's great emphasis placed on a woman's power, and a great source of that comes from this idea of the womb. And I felt so kind of lost and confused because I didn't have this anymore. So it was just a really strange time. And not to mention, I just really kind of got out of rhythm with my body's own natural cycles. You know, when you're used to having an actual menstruation cycle, it's pretty apparent where you are in that, and there's this actual physical reminder of what your body's going through each month. But once you no longer have that, it really became sometimes difficult to know what was going on with my body and what was going on with my mind and my emotions. And I started working with the moon and tracking the lunar cycle as a way to kind of keep in touch and understand my body and what was happening in my body, since I had no longer this physical cycle that was happening each month. And I found through this connection to just trying to kind of track what was happening with me physically and emotionally, it really opened up this deep spiritual connection, because I realized this wasn't something that was necessarily just for women. This is something that we all can live more in harmony with. The moon goes through these natural cycles, and it ebbs and flows, and there are times for action and there are times for rest. And through my own personal work in kind of this deep dive into this connection with the lunar cycle, and of course for me that involved a lot of work with my crystals, because I'm a crystal teacher, I just got so much more out of that practice than I ever thought I would. And I decided that what I was doing would really probably benefit a lot of people. So I decided to share it in a book.
Well, thank you for that. You have, and this is a different, interesting concept. So it's something for us to sort of grow with. So you were talking about the lunar cycles, and you say that there's 8 phases. So, and I know these phases are, you go into depth about what they are, but can you just tell us on the 8 phases and just generally what they're about?
Yeah, so we have the new moon. That's kind of where the lunar cycle starts. This is where the moon appears dark in the sky. And so if you ever look out at night and you don't see the moon, or you think that there is no moon, chances are that you're just really seeing the phase of the new moon. And this happens because the moon is placed between the earth and the sun. And when we see the moon lighted in the sky, it's actually reflecting the sun's light. So when it's between the earth and the sun, we're seeing actually the dark side of the moon, and the side away from us would be lighted, but we just can't see it. So this is that time of the new moon, and this is all about adventure and new beginnings and anticipation of what's to come and opportunities, and kind of planting the seeds for the things that you'd like to accomplish or manifest or focus on during the upcoming lunar cycle. So this is kind of where it all begins. Now, as the moon starts to make its orbit around the Earth and it starts to move around the Earth, we see this phase move into the waxing crescent, because as the moon moves, we can now see part of it lighted by the sun. It's just a little skinny sliver of a crescent. And since the moon's light is now in the growing stage or waxing stage, this is the waxing crescent. And this phase is really all about starting to take action. The new moon is really more about planning. And as soon as we move into that waxing crescent, we can start to take action on those plans. It's also about expansion and growth, because this is kind of the beginning stages of when this starts to happen. And it really is kind of a reflection of our own personal power and our progress and our wisdom. So this is a really important time. And many of us, even if we do work with the moon, we tend to really just focus on the full moon. But by the time we get around to the full moon, things are kind of at their peak. They're really coming along. And we've kind of missed the opportunity to follow these natural cycles and really take action during these really powerful times like the waxing crescent. So then the moon continues its journey and it enters the phase of the first quarter moon. This is where half of the moon appears lighted and it's still in this waxing or growing phase. And this phase is all about bravery and communication and overcoming obstacles. So as we've started to take action during the waxing crescent phase, inevitably, something isn't going to go according to plan, right? That's just the nature of life. Well, the first quarter moon is that time and reminder for us to overcome these obstacles, to be brave, to focus on wellness and communication and anything that we can do to improve our situation. So then the moon continues a little further, and now it's mostly lighted, and there's just a skinny little crescent of darkness. So it's still in this waxing stage where it's growing from the new moon to the full moon, but now this is the waxing gibbous phase. And this phase is all about accepting kind of how far you've come in this process. It's also a time for a moment of celebration and to really celebrate your achievements and your progress. And it's also like where we start to really feel these feelings of surrender and tranquility, because we're just about at the time of the full moon, which is kind of the peak of power in this cycle. So then moving into the full moon, this is where we all see the moon fully lighted. And this is really about achievement and completion and being in flow and manifesting and power and wholeness. So this is a really, really powerful time. And it's really kind of interesting to note here that many women, their menstrual cycle will actually fall around the time of the full moon. And this is, there's no coincidence that in many ancient cultures, traditionally women who were menstruating were thought to be at like the height of their intuition, the peak of their spiritual power. And often this would fall around the time of that full moon. So then, after we hit that peak of power, slowly the moon goes into the waning phases, where the light begins to decrease and the moon starts to grow dark again. So now we have another little sliver of darkness. It's kind of a mirror of the waxing gibbous moon, but now we're in the waning gibbous moon phase. So we have a sliver of darkness and the moon is still mostly lighted, but it's beginning to grow darker. And here's where it's really time to start focusing on letting go, maybe letting go of anything that wasn't realized or actualized during this full moon. It's a time for receiving all of the amazing things that the full moon time has brought you in your life. It's also a time of reflection and really understanding and kind of contemplating why things may have worked out as they did. And it's also a great time for setting boundaries in your life. After you do that reflection, if there were any obstacles that were caused by your own internal conflicts, situations involving other people, we can set boundaries so that they help us in our next lunar cycle. So now the moon continues to grow a little bit darker still, and we get to the last quarter moon, or sometimes called the third quarter moon, and this is the reflection of the first quarter. So now it's half lighted and half dark, but on the opposite side. And here we're really focusing on solitude. This is where we start to retreat inward, kind of go back from that action phase into this rest phase and really stand in our sovereignty and our independence. And start to prepare ourselves for the next new moon, where we'll be doing a lot of soul searching and intention setting again. So this is a time for strength and a time to allow any kind of epiphanies to sort of come into your sphere of thinking. Then the moon grows a little bit darker still, and now we have the waning crescent. So now there's just a tiny sliver of light. The moon is mostly dark. It's very close to becoming the next new moon or dark moon. And here we're focusing on release, releasing anything that doesn't serve us before our next lunar cycle. We're focused on relaxation and rest and stillness. And I think that as we start to work with this lunar cycle, which takes just about a month, and actually the word month is derivative from the word moon, this is really kind of about learning to live in harmony and learning to live in the ebb and flow of these natural cycles, focusing on that time of action as the moon's light is increasing and waxing and growing, and then focusing on inner reflection and stillness and rest as the moon begins to grow dark again.
That's incredible. You know, there are I live in Florida, and there are certain times of the year when our moon is upside down. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but we have an upside down moon, and I just am so fascinated by it because when I lived in the Northeast or middle of, Baltimore, I never saw anything like that. Have you ever seen an upside down moon?
Yeah, when I was in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Different from there than I was used to.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you talk about in your book crystals for the 13 modern moons, and I thought the modern moons were pretty interesting. Let's go through them just briefly. So the first one is the wolf moon in January. What is the wolf moon? What is the history of that?
Yeah, so the wolf moon was named for a time when wolves could be heard in the distance at night. It occurs in January. This is a time of scarcity, a time where food is scant, and wolves were thought to be howling out of hunger. And the sound of their howling was said to be especially crisp and clear in the cold winter air. So this is usually a time of communication and of solitude. So thinking of like the iconic image of the lone wolf. And if we think about kind of how this looks, similar to the cycle of the eight lunar phases that occur in approximately a month, if we look at the larger cycle of the year, the winter is almost like that time of the new moon. It's this time for a little bit of stillness and planning, and that's kind of what we see here with the wolf moon. So there are some crystals that work well with this moon. Black moonstone is one, labradorite is another, and selenite is another, because they kind of reflect that energy.
Okay, thanks. That's great. The next February is the ice moon. What is that about?
So the ice moon is named for the intense cold that usually occurs in February. So this is kind of a time where there is, in most areas in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, a time for great cold. And ice is everywhere present. So when we look at this moon, we think about ice and the qualities of ice. This is a time for clarity, a time for our own inner reflection, inner clarity, mental clarity, understanding. but it's also a time to evaluate our perception of things. So understanding that our perspective is one of many, and really evaluating our perception of ourselves, of our relationships, of our role in the world. But this is also a time of intuition. So kind of allowing yourself to be guided by your intuition after you've kind of done that deep dive work into your own perception and gotten some clarity about your path forward.
How did these moons get their names? I'm just going to go through and name them, and then you can give us some kind of idea. So we talked about the wolf moon, the ice moon. There's the storm moon, growing moon,
storm,
you know,
moon
growing
is
moon.
Mars.
Okay, the hare moon in May, the rose moon in June. I'm just for time's sake, because I want to talk to you about other things too. The hay moon in July, the corn moon in August, September, the harvest moon. Now, we've all heard of the harvest moon.
Of course.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So this is actually the moon that we just had last month. So the harvest moon obviously is named for the harvest. Traditionally, in agrarian societies, this was a time where all of the hard work that has happened since seeds were sown in spring is finally realized. So this was a time of great abundance and a time for celebration after all of the hard work that was needed to harvest these crops. So this occurs at the time of the fall harvest traditionally, and it is this time for celebration, this time for kind of reveling in the fruits of our labor and giving thanks for the abundance that we've received. It's also a time for opening to this idea of receiving. If we have this, you know, kind of blocks around balance between giving and receiving. And it's also a time for recognizing our achievements, because sometimes we're so caught up and concerned with what needs to be done or with pushing forward that we forget to pause and reflect and really celebrate just how far we've come.
So we're currently, in October, we're currently in the blood moon. And, the blood moon. What is that about?
I know, it sounds creepy, like just in time for Halloween,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, right, Halloween, right.
So the blood moon actually gets its name because it occurs usually during times of the hunt. So this is really about the hunting of wild animals. Our ancestors would have been hunting deer, elk, moose, things like that. And so this was, you know, comparatively, when you contrast with September's harvest moon and October's blood moon, we've really enjoyed the harvest of the land in September. And now when we get to October, we're going into the dark time of the year and food will start to become scarcer. So this idea of hunting for sustenance becomes more important. Now, after the domestication of livestock, this instead became associated with the time that animals were slaughtered for food. So where, pigs and cows and things had been raised, this was the time of sending those animals to the slaughterhouse, which is a bit dark, but we also need to realize that this is a deeply ingrained part of our natural cycles in the world. And we often are really disconnected from that. You know, we shop at big grocery stores and meat comes packaged and clean and prepared and ready to go. And none of us usually have really had the experience of kind of seeing firsthand where that really comes from. And so this time of the blood moon is a time for thanks and gratitude to our connection with the natural world. But it's also a time of the hunter. So it's a time of initiation and of journey and of triumph in our lives and of overcoming challenges. So this is really closely associated with this kind of hunter archetype, this warrior.
Okay, so we have in November the snow moon, in December the cold moon. And then you talk about blue, the blue moon. What is the blue moon?
Yes. So I'm really glad you asked about this. You know, if we look at our traditional calendar, there are 12 months in a calendar year. But because a lunar month isn't the same length as a calendar month, sometimes there are extra moons. It would be a fourth moon within the same season. So we have our three moons that would go for each month of like a quarter or a season of the year. And if there is a fourth moon, this is known as a blue moon. So it's actually the third of those four moons would be the blue moon. And this occurs actually only about once every 19 years. So the saying once in a blue moon really does mean pretty darn infrequently. But there's a lot of misconception about the blue moon because more recently in the 1940s, there was an error printed by a well-known publication, and they called a blue moon the second full moon in a single month, which it technically is, but that doesn't necessarily align always with the traditional definition, which is a fourth moon in a season. So this happens a lot more commonly. So you can have two full moons in 1 month, but still just three in a season. So that wouldn't technically truly be the correct name for a blue moon. So it's really interesting how these things kind of change through history. So when someone talks about a blue moon today, we really don't know if they mean the second full moon in the month or the fourth full moon in a season.
Interesting. All right, there's other moons. And you have different lists the crystals. There's a Celtic, there's Celtic moons.
Moon.
Right. So you've paired crystals with these moons. And how does that work? How do certain crystals go with the moon cycle?
Here I'm really kind of looking at the archetypal energies of each of the moons. So you asked earlier, how did I, come up with this list of names for the 13 modern moons? These are really pulled from kind of a variety of different cultural traditions. So they're from the American settlers. There are names in here from China, from ancient Greece or Rome, from the Germanic peoples. There are just so many places that these moon names come from. And in the section for the modern moons that we just talked about, that really is, they're called the modern moons because these are the moons that people still most commonly talk about today. Then I also have the native moons and the Celtic moons. So when we're looking at these moons, say it's the modern moon or the Celtic moon or whatever it is, they all kind of have these key words associated with them. Like we talked a little bit about what some of these moons really mean just in our chat a few seconds ago. So when I look at what the meanings of those moons are and what the energies are that we should be embodying at that specific time of year, I looked for crystals that would really support that kind of work, that really aligned with the archetypal energy of the moon. So if we look at kind of the keywords or properties of the moon, I found crystals that had similar properties that could really support that kind of work.
So, and how do crystals actually, no, let me just ask you this. So how would we use crystals with the moon?
So that's one of the great things about this book is that I've actually included a ritual for every single one of these moons because that can be a little daunting, right? When you don't really quite maybe know what you're doing, you're not sure what's happening. So for example, let's take a look at the blood moon, which we talked about. That's the full moon in October. That's for this month. So I have a ritual that works with the crystals of this moon. So the crystals here are bloodstone, pink tourmaline, and ruby. So to connect with the energy of this specific blood moon, there's like a little ritual or ceremony, and really just a way of connecting yourself with these energies. So you can start by collecting some leaves from outdoors. In most places, the leaves will at least start changing this time of year. So if you can find some nice fall colored leaves, maybe some red leaves to reflect that red color of the blood moon, that can be really helpful. And bring them inside into your sacred space. They're great for just kind of a fall decoration, but they're more than that. They're really a reminder of this change in the seasons, and they're a way to tap in and connect to that natural cycle. So then I like to grab one of those crystals, either a bloodstone or a pink tourmaline or a ruby, hold it in your hands for a few minutes, take a few deep breaths, and kind of just tune into the energy of the crystal. And then for this specific blood moon, which is really about the journey and the challenge of the hunter archetype, you can take a few minutes to write down a list of self-care activities that would really nourish your physical body through this time of challenge and through this journey time. And then you can set that crystal that you've worked with on top of the leaves or on top of this list that you've created. And then each time you see this crystal, it's a reminder to perform one of those self-care actions from the list that you created so that you're actually making time for this thing in your life.
Now, do we actually have to hold these crystals or can we just look at them?
That's a great question. I think that it really depends on the person. Some of us are more visual, and you might really get a lot more from the crystal and find that you have a deeper connection by just really looking at it and admiring it and appreciating it visually. I'm personally a lot more kind of tactile and kinesthetic and hands-on, which I think is one of the reasons I love working with crystals to begin with. So for me, I really get the most out of them when I hold them or carry them around in my pockets, or even if I get a piece of jewelry that has that crystal in it and I wear it on my body. And then every time I kind of see it, I just touch that crystal lightly, and it's just a good reminder to connect with the energy that I'm trying to create in my life.
So there's a lot of crystals that are used in this book, and it's a big accumulation for people who have never started doing this. So can they be small? Does the size of the crystal matter?
That's also a really good question, and one that I get asked quite a lot. I personally don't think that the size of the stone matters at all. You know, there's kind of a happy medium depending on the work that you're doing. You don't want something that's so tiny that you're going to lose it right away, but you don't want something so big and bulky that it's really difficult to work with. I really love just little pocket tumbled stones. Those are kind of my favorite because I feel like they're really easy to work with. They feel nice when you hold them. They're not too bulky if you want to put one in your pocket or even tuck one in your bra. And they're just a really affordable way to work with crystals as well. Like most tumbled stones are like a buck or less.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it doesn't have to be in its natural state. It can be tumbled and polished.
You know, there is a lot of controversy over that in the crystal healing community, and really it comes down to personal preference. I personally feel like tumbled stones are great, particularly for people who are really sensitive to energy, because the energy is really soft. It radiates outward in all directions evenly. It's really easy to work with. But if you really need more of a punch, more of an energetic breakthrough, a big push to overcome something, then a rough stone, a natural stone, can be a little bit better suited. However, the alternative side of that is that if you are really, really sensitive to energy, that can sometimes feel a bit overwhelming. So I think it's really just each person's personal preference, what you have available, and just kind of finding what really works for you.
What about, like quartz crystals? What if we carry a crystal with us all the time, can that do anything for us?
Absolutely. I think this is actually one of the best ways to work with crystal energy. When we have a crystal that we're carrying around, we form a bond and connection with it. It's always kind of there to support us when we need that support. It can be a really important reminder or even just a physical touchstone for something that we're trying to embody in our lives. But when we're working this deeply and intensely with our crystals, it's also important to cleanse them from time to time.
And how do we do that?
There are so many great ways to cleanse your crystals. Of course, burning sacred herbs and passing your crystals through the smoke is very popular, especially with sage and Palo Santo. But there is a lot of controversy about that at the moment because these are really sacred plant medicines and they're kind of being overly utilized. I really personally love to cleanse my crystals with sound. So bells, singing bowls, chimes, anything like that. The sound vibration is so strong that it kind of passes through your crystal and removes any energies that have accumulated from just being in the environment or being around other people. And the great thing about working with sound for cleansing your crystals is just like that sound is passing through your crystals and cleansing your crystals, it's also cleansing your space. So you'll see a lot of feng shui practitioners when they're doing space clearing or home blessing, using bells to clear space. And it also clears our own energy fields. It's also, you know, not any issue for people with asthma or breathing difficulties, whereas burning sacred herbs causes the smoke, which can be challenging for people that struggle with that. And then there are just a myriad of other ways that are really traditional, like putting your crystals in salt or running them under water and things like that. But it can be difficult to do a large group of crystals at once. It can be really time consuming. There are a lot of things you have to know about that, like some crystals shouldn't go in the water, some crystals shouldn't go in the salt, and that can just kind of cause a lot of problems. So sound is really safe, effective, and easy.
Okay. What about sunlight? What about putting them in the sunlight? Does that help?
Yeah, that's a common way to cleanse and charge your crystals, but what I would really encourage everybody to do is actually use the moonlight instead. When we put our crystals in the sunlight, if they're like brightly colored and somewhat transparent, so think of things like amethyst, rose quartz, milky quartz, fluorite, celestite, they'll actually fade over time. I don't know if any of you have ever done this, but I had this great amethyst, and I left it in my windowsill for a good period of time. And after a little while, the color really started to fade and dissipate, and it was really disappointing because I loved how deep, dark, kind of grape jelly purple it was before that. So I would say it's fine to do that. You just need to know that if they are kind of transparent or translucent crystals of intense color, that the sun will actually fade them. But the moonlight's kind of nice as long as, of course, you get them out of the sunlight. I don't expect you to wake up right before sunrise to take your crystals out of the window. But you can, you know, first thing in the morning when you get up, just remove them. As long as they're not sitting there for months or weeks on end, you're fine. One other thing to just be cautious with sunlight is to just be sure that you're not putting things like quartz spheres in the sunlight because they act kind of like a magnifying glass and they can actually start a fire.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
So how do you know what the energetic quality of a stone is? Do you know personally, or have you studied it, and that's how you know?
So, yeah, I mean, I've been teaching crystal classes since 2007. I've taken over 100 professional crystal trainings. Personally, I love crystals. I'm always learning more through reading about them, through working with them. And, of course, you know, some easy ways are to look up the properties online, get a good book of crystal properties, and, you know, that coming from an author who's written about crystal properties myself, I would also say, though, that you should always rely on your own intuition and inner guidance, even more than what an expert has to say, because all of us who are writing about crystal properties, we're really writing on our own experience, our work with our clients, insight that we have in meditation. There's no hard and fast rules about this. There are some great historical resources that you can pull from for inspiration, but mostly I would just encourage everyone who's listening to, you know, just decide to find a few moments of stillness with your crystal. Pay attention to how it makes you feel emotionally, what part of your body it kind of draws attention to, and really think about what that's trying to tell you in terms of how you could use that for your own healing and personal development?
I was told, I don't know, a long time ago, that we should choose the crystal that attracts us. So in other words, if you go into a store, I know that you have a metaphysical store. So if we go into a store like yours and we see all these crystals and we don't really know what we want to do, we find the one that we're most attracted to. Is that correct?
That is absolutely what I recommend to all of my customers. What's really interesting is sometimes, you know, I'll have someone come in the shop and they'll say, what is the best crystal to help me with my love life? And I'll kind of turn the question back around on them because, yes, I could recommend a rose quartz or a rhodochrosite or something like that that are traditionally associated with love. But I'll say, okay, close your eyes for a moment, get centered, and then open your eyes and look at these stones and see which one calls your attention. And maybe they're really drawn to something like a citrine, which really has nothing to do with love and relationships, but it's a great confidence booster. And maybe the problem that they've really had in their love life isn't that they're having trouble attracting a partner, but that they really need to work on their own self-confidence. So maybe that's kind of at the root and what they really need, truly. And then I encourage them to look up the properties of that stone afterward, after they've chosen. And usually it's exactly what they need at that time.
Oh, wow. This is such, you know, I'm so interested in this. I actually took one crystal course, but you know, you have to learn a lot because there's so much to know about these crystals. So I have a couple of around the house, and I have sometimes when I do my shows, I set up an upright amethyst, and I surround it by crystal points just to give me energy. And I get so hot when I do that. I do it under my chair. I get so hot. but anyway, so I know basic stuff, but thank you for the education, and I think we're all going to look at the moon differently from now on, and, you know, and to my listeners, there's other kinds of moons. There's the zodiac moons and as Ashley was saying, she has different kinds of moons, and it's really cool to read about them. And as I said before, well, the book is called Cosmic Crystals, Rituals and Meditations for Connecting with Lunar Energy, written by Ashley Leavy, Leavy. Ashley, where is your book? Where can we get it?
So you can get signed copies through my website at loveandlightschool.com. I'd love to make out a little personal message to you and send you one in the mail with a few little goodies. Or, of course, you can get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. If you're in, like, Australia, you can get it through Books A Million. And anywhere that books are sold, tons and tons of small local bookshops also carry it. If they don't have it, you can also ask them to order you a copy.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I recommend that to my listeners. I mean, it's a really, really nice book. Great job, Ashley. I know you worked hard on this book, and but thank you so much for taking the time to educate us. It's been wonderful having you.
Thanks so much. Thank you. I really appreciate being on the show.
Well, I have to say goodbye, but have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions, you can email me at loveyourlife@randifine.com. Randy is randi.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.